Thank you. You may be seated. We probably have a starting place to understand fasting. We probably have a baseline to understand fasting. That fasting is to do without food for a period of time. Now, I will just tell you right at the beginning what I'm going to kind of instruct through this little short kind of series, just two or three messages here on the subject, but you're going to find out through the series that one, fasts aren't just about food. In fact, even in this text, you'll find that there are multiple fasts laid out, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But fasts aren't just about food. I remember early on in our marriage, my wife and I, we hated how much control the TV had over our own minds, over our own hearts. We hadn't had TV for years, and then we ended up with one, and we watched it, and we didn't like that we were spending a couple hours on this thing. It just drove me nuts that. What I didn't like was trying to finish up what we were doing so that we could hurry over and catch something. Anybody ever done that? Oh, I hate that. I hated that I felt I needed to do that. I hated that I knew, hey, if we're out of here by 8 o'clock, I can find out if she falls in love with him and if he kills his brother. And I thought, you know, how dumb, how stupid is it that I'm letting these people that aren't even real people control my life like this? And so I remember we did a fast and we did it was a month. I think we ended up 30 days. We're not going to turn the TV on. It was the best thing we did for our marriage at that point. It was so good. We weren't hurried. I mean, it bothered us for a day or two. But if you're willing to go through the initial, you know, agony of not knowing if Susie gets back with Johnny, as long as you are willing to go through that initial agony, I tell you, it was so freeing. I loved it. I like things not being able to control me like that. And so that was one of those early on kind of things. And I think we're all familiar with a food fast. You know, the food fast is that, you know, you'll go without food for a period of time. Now, some people say, well, it's 24 hours, or that's this period of time, or this period of time, this period of time. Well, I don't know that there's a Bible verse that says it has to be for X number of times. The truth is, Jesus did it for 40 days and 40 nights, and I'm so grateful he doesn't demand all of us do that. The truth is that fasting was used at varying lengths. There were different lengths of fasting, and the basis of all of it was there was a predetermined length before you got into it, okay? And so you find that many times that the two are connected, and we'll go over that in weeks ahead. But so there are non-food fast, and then there is, of course, the standard that we know, that is the food fast, and there are different reasons. People do fast. People fast. You know that there are unsaved people that fast on a daily basis. They intentionally do it. Now, they don't do it so that it brings out any spiritual work in their lives. They do it for health reasons. They do it because if you don't have calories till noon, it's a lot easier to control the number of calories you eat in a day, and there's some just basic reasons they do it. So what is it that makes it special about us? And that's what I believe we need to look at tonight. What makes fasting so important for us? And I believe that it has to do directly with how we view the Lord. How we view the Lord. In fact, as you look at the text tonight, you find that Nehemiah has gathered the people together in Israel. And it, of course, there in Jerusalem, the walls had been brought down and the temple was destroyed and burned. And we know that the kingdom had been toppled and Babylon had just brought it to rubble. And so when God has, if you've been following along with us in our series of Habakkuk, you find out the Babylonians are coming. Well, Nehemiah is the book written after the Babylonians have come and gone and been destroyed as God promised, and the Medes and Persians are now in control. And so in our text tonight, we are seeing Nehemiah after when he has been sent back to help the people of Israel, help the people of Jerusalem rebuild the walls of the city. The Bible tells us that this amazing work happened, that Nehemiah comes to the city, assesses the problem, assesses the situation, and then with the people of God have begun to rebuild the walls. And in fact, doing so, they've rebuilt the walls in 52 days. The walls are up. And they recognize that this was not because they were awesome masonry workers. They recognize that God had intervened on their behalf. We recognize that God didn't miraculously move rocks from this place to this place. There wasn't rocks coming to life in the middle of the night and finding their place in the stack. And really, if you step back and looked at it, you would say, well, these people, they had a lot of work and they sweat a lot and they really put themselves to the work. And so they should be proud of what they've accomplished. But when they stepped back, they said, there's really no way that we could have accomplished this on our own strength. God must have been working with us. God must have been making this happen. And Nehemiah is allowing them to go through the logic of seeing something bigger than them and recognizing that there had to be some force involved, some participation involved of someone who is larger than them. The result then is that Nehemiah points the people of God back to God. And what you find in chapter 9 is the process whereby Nehemiah is taking the people of Jerusalem back to God who has intervened on their behalf. The God who has worked to see this city reestablished. There is joy and gratitude in the heart of the people. Can you imagine the thrill they had? Yes, the city is completely laid waste, but a people that were at one time, they were in danger because the enemy could come in from any side and destroy them or take away their home. Now they had walls to defend themselves. God truly had provided them the protection they need so that they could build the lives that they needed to. In fact, it goes without saying that safety and security are one of the most important elements of a city being able to advance. They now have one of these key essential elements to be able to grow their city again, and that is they have safety and security. And God has provided this need. So they want to. And they see Nehemiah leading them, and all of them together are going toward the Lord. And by this, they employ a simple tool called fasting. Look at verse number 1, and you see them using this method, or using this I don't want to call it a method. It really is just a tool. It is a practice that has no other spiritual work to it other than the fact that God will use it to adjust some things in our lives. The first is that we find in verse number 1, now on the 24th day of this month, the children of Israel were assembled with fasting. So often, we blow right past those words. We blow right by them. We allow them to slide off the page, and we never even recognize that when he speaks about the fact that they were fasting, there were real people in the city gathered together who had abstained from eating. They had abstained from something that is essential to life. They had abstained from something which is so normal and natural that we will do it on accident. We will do it without even considering what is in front of us. In fact, in our culture today, we live in the kind of culture where food is so readily available. It's possible to eat thousands of calories you didn't even realize you were eating. It's possible to eat large amounts of food and say, well, I didn't eat that much. No, it wasn't that much. Then we step back and we count it, right, on one of those little calculators. And then we're like, well, no wonder the scale keeps saying that. Why? Because it's easy to do. And these individuals had intentionally cut themselves off from a natural process that is essential to their life. They have done this not because they want to look better in swimsuit season. They have done this because they want to be right with God. Don't let this moment slide by you. They have joined themselves together with fasting. Now you think about why God would say this. Why is God saying this? Does he mean they are praying? No, he doesn't mean that they're praying. You know how we know this? Because God knows how to spell praying. If he wanted to say praying, he would have said praying, wouldn't he? Now, he didn't say praying, did he? He said fasting. Why? Because he wants you to know what they were doing when they got a hold of God. Or more importantly, when he got a hold of them. You see, God was telling us that they were involved in a practice of fasting, not so that they could work God out, not so that they could make God do what they wanted him to do. They weren't trying to twist the arm of God. They weren't trying to drag God down so that he had to do what they said. They weren't trying to manipulate God. They weren't trying to get God on their side. No, this was a group of people who had already seen God do incredible things. And they've joined themselves together in fasting. This is a response of the heart to the goodness of God. This is not people trying to get something from God. These are people who have already received from God and have responded in fasting. We automatically think of fasting. We think of fasting for power, power in ministry, or power to overcome sin and overcome temptation. And we will look at the text itself, but even Jesus said that there was a work of the devil, there was a work of demons that could not be overcome except through prayer and fasting. So prayer and fasting does serve to provide the believer with power to overcome the evil one. We recognize that. Well, we also recognize that God answers fasting prayer, and we can look through Scripture, and we will find places where the people asked God to do something, joined themselves in fasting, and God worked in amazing ways. But let us be clear about this one thing. The people in Nehemiah's day were not trying to get God to do something for them. They were not trying to overcome the wicked one. This initial place of fasting did not start with trying to get God on their side. They already had him and responded in obedient fasting. The people joined themselves together in fasting. Why is it that they did this kind of fast, preacher? What is it that you believe they were doing in this fast? I believe what is happening is that they are allowing their minds to be changed from some things. They are looking at life differently right now because of the way that God has worked. You see, before, they had some objections to what Nehemiah wanted to do. They had some questions about the kind of God he was serving. They had some inhibitions about the sacrifices it was going to take to accomplish this goal. But here in Nehemiah chapter 9, we find a people that have come together sacrificing and setting aside the natural so that they could be right and made right with the Holy God. And I believe what Nehemiah was doing was he was bringing the people of God to a place where they had to choose to see things differently than they have for years. They had to choose to look at God differently. They had to choose to look at their daily needs differently. They had to choose to look at their worship differently. They had to choose to look at their life and what really made up the days of their life. They had to choose to look differently at the things they have always taken for granted. You see, they had put a fasting and sackcloth. The Bible says in verse number 1, they had assembled with fasting and with sackcloths and earth upon them. So what they have done is they've gathered together in this mode of fasting. In fasting, they've also added dirt on top of their head, and they are wearing a heavy, scratchy garment here, these bags really called sackcloth. And if you want to know what sackcloth is, it's cloth sacks are made out of. I don't know why you have to define that. That's what it is. If you've seen an old potato sack, you know that bag is so scratchy and itchy, and they cover their bodies in this, and they get in the dirt with this thing, and they throw their mud and they throw the clay into their own hair, and they put on a mourning. They have fasted and they have mourned. Well, what are they mourning? What are they mourning the loss of? This mourning, this situation of mourning, is a recognition, number one, that they had done wrong in the eyes of God. It was a recognition that they had been alienated from God himself. Secondly, I believe what was taking place was something had changed, something had died. And they were marking a place in condition of their own heart where something had changed, even to the point where you could say a perspective they once carried is dead now. And they are going through the process of mourning the loss of the way they used to view God. And now they are taking on as a brand new thing that which is new and true about God. You see, what was happening was humility. In the old, in ancient times, when they would put on sackcloth and cover themselves in ashes or in clay or in dirt, they would go with fasting. What they were doing was they were allowing people on the outward to understand what was going on inwardly. It wasn't a show. It wasn't putting on, okay? So it's not the same as you find in Matthew chapter 6 when Jesus warns, don't do your prayers in public, you know, don't give your alms in front of people. This was actually an entirely different thing. This was different because the sackcloth and ashes and the fasting that was done publicly was actually done as a way to humble self. It was a way of saying, look, I've been wrong. I've been doing this all wrong. This isn't the way it should be. This isn't how it should work. This was not, hey, look at me. Look at me. I've got dirt in my hair. Look at me. I really love Jesus. That's not what was going on. They were saying, I thought things were going to work out this way. And I was wrong. I thought I could have my own way. And I thought I could follow in the sinful behaviors of my ancestors. And I thought that my father's way was right, but I had been wrong, and I realized that it was the sin of my father's father that brought me here to this place, and I am leaving this place. You see, there was a humility involved. And I want us to understand, I believe that one of the most important roles that fasting and prayer can play in the life of a believer is that it would change the way we view ourselves. That what it does is it puts us at a place where we have to determine my needs are not more important than being right with my God. It is saying, it is changing the perspective of the way I see myself. And ultimately what I've done is I have for day after day after day after day after day after day after day, I tell my flesh, you're the most important thing. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to make sure you get all the sleep you need. I'm going to make sure we eat when you want to eat. I'm going to make sure that if you have a sweet tooth, you get all the sweets you want. And I'm going to make sure, and we go through, what are we doing all the day long? Pampering this thing. All day, just pampering self. No, you see, when we have to stop and we intentionally fast to allow the Lord to get a hold of our hearts, we start to take the priorities and change those priorities. We say, God, your view and your perspective is far more important than mine. You say, well, how do you know that I'm so inclined to do that? I don't necessarily want to dive into like weight loss and things, but if you've ever gone on a diet before, has anybody in here ever fought with themselves over that, right? They go into a diet and they're like, oh man, I want this, right? Like I didn't need it at 9 o'clock when I said I'm going to start my diet, but it's 3 and now I'm going to die if I don't get ice cream, right? And like we fight. Our brains have a way of initiating war against us. What is that? That's not some tame thing. That's like leaving your kids at grandma's house for a week, coming home to them and finding out they're not the same kids you dropped off. This is the way our bodies work against us. We have these things that we think we can control, and we think we're in charge of this. Tell it it can't have something and find out who it's willing to kill to get it. You might be what it's willing to kill. You see, this is how our flesh works. It hides back behind the veil of, hey, you and I are the same, until you tell it it can't have something. You're not going to have this thing. And all of a sudden, our emotions get involved. Our instincts get involved. Our passions get involved. And we'll get to where we can't even tell ourselves no. You see, fasting, I believe at its core, is as the New Testament writers described it, it is a type of temperance. It's a type of self-control to force upon yourself some uncomfortable state so that your heart can be reminded the body is not what matters most. Their perspective of themselves has changed. You see, they continue in the fast. In verse number 2, we see them kind of do multiple different layers of fast. The seed of Israel separated themselves from all strangers. Not only have they separated themselves from food, now they've separated themselves from strangers. They've done this on purpose to identify that they should never have allowed those who God said don't allow in, they should never have allowed them in. And now they've separated themselves from those. And this is not a small thing. They've separated themselves from husbands and wives that have never turned themselves to Jehovah. Remember, the big problem was, is a lot of people had been marrying Canaanites in the land. And here Nehemiah says, we're going to go get right with God. The Canaanites don't get to come. They've separated from them, from the strangers, and they've pulled themselves away to be reminded that they must make right with God. The Bible says, and they confessed their sins and the iniquities of their fathers. Number three, and they stood up in their place and read in the book of the law. Now you find them fasting in their time. The law of the Lord, their God, 1/4 part of the day, and another 1/4 they confessed and worshiped the Lord, their God. You see, there was a change in the perspective of themselves, how they viewed themselves, but there was also a change in their purity. There was a change in their purity. You see, fasting, I believe, it serves us to allow us to remember that there must be a purity in our lives, that we've got to keep the main thing the main thing. And we can't allow ourselves to be those that get isolated and get bound up in the world. I remind you tonight that 2 Timothy 2:4 is still as true as it ever was, that the soldier that wishes to please the Lord cannot and must not bind himself in the cares of this life. He can't. He must keep himself removed from the cares of this world. He must not live in this life like this is the only life to be lived. I'm grateful for the many blessings of God, but I don't live for my wardrobe. And I'm thankful for the good things that God has given to me. But we don't live for the house or the car or the job or the career. We don't live for any of these things. We're not to be trapped and caught in any of these things. Can we enjoy them? Yes. Can we own them? Sure. But let us be those who own them, like those who barely hold on to it, so that if God wishes to take it away, we don't get upset and stingy with God. Let us be those who remember our lives are to be pure vessels, pure instruments, not bound up and caught up in the things of the world. And I believe if we will allow it, fasting would even go so far as to push the boundaries in our heart and our mind to understand that we are not trapped in the stuff of this world. That we are not to be caught and bound up. And if I be even so bold, we're not to be addicted to the stuff of this world. And if you looked at the modern believer, in fact, don't look around. Look in your own heart. Can you tell me tonight that nothing has bound your heart? That nothing keeps you trapped? We're not to be addicted to the stuff of this world. And if we allow ourselves to go through even the difficult path of something as simple as fasting, it does something to the heart. It forces reality in the heart. It is more than just the outward action. You recognize that outward action is not all there is to the Christian walk. But if we wish to see real spiritual change, we're going to have to get in deep to the heart. And I believe what fasting allows us to do is say from the outward part of our body, we can say to our heart, heart, calm down. You don't need this stuff that bad. You don't need it as bad as you think you need it. You don't need it as bad as you think it's going to destroy you. I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it. Now, by the way, I am going to make a small caveat here. And please make sure you're medically able to do this, because there might actually be some ramification on the other side. But when it's all pretty much said and done, you're probably not going to die because you went 24 hours without food. If you hydrate well enough, you're probably not going to die. Take a mineral. Take a multivitamin. You're probably going to make it. You say, I work a pretty heavy job. Do it on your day off. I don't want to do that on my day off. Give some time to the Lord and give him opportunity to challenge the heart where it lies. And the heart is so deceived. It is so deceptive even that not even you or I could know it, according to Jeremiah. I believe the fasting will allow us to tell the heart, listen, you're going to make it. You're going to be okay. Years ago, a friend of mine and I, we'd work out together in the mornings, and he and I were on a bike ride one morning, and just before we hit the trail, we got to talking about fasting. He says, you know, I want to do a fast, preacher. I said, you know, I wasn't a preacher at the time. He said, I want to do a fast. I said, you know, that sounds like a lot of fun. And Mark and I were talking about it a little bit, and both of us were a little impetuous. We didn't really think through a whole lot of things. And we were just riding along, and he said, "I'm going to do a fast. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a fast." I don't remember how many days. It was multiple days long. I think it was about 7 days, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't more than that. And we just chit-chatting back and forth, and he said, "I think we could do a fast." I said, "Of course we could do a fast. We could kill a fast. Man, we would nail it." Anybody know where this story's going? The next 7 days, I didn't eat anything. And what I remember that morning, I remember saying to Mark, I remember saying, "You know what would excite me the most is to see what I would be like at the end of 7 days where my body and my heart didn't get to tell me what to do. They had to do what they were told." You know, through that whole process, those were the words that kept coming back at me almost as a mockery, almost making fun of me. But I remember those words were the things I held on to through that entire 7 days. "Lord, I don't want my heart to think it gets to tell me what to do. I don't want my body to tell me what to do. I want to be able to say, no, you're not doing this, and you will do what I tell you to do, and you will be okay." I remember it was the fifth or fourth day. It was fifth morning. I woke up, and I remember being perfectly still. I described it to my wife. I said, my body's not saying it needs anything. My heart's not saying, "Go, go, go, you got to find something. You eat something. There's chewed up gum. Swallow that." It wasn't doing anything. It was just still. It wasn't telling me what to do anymore. That was the whole pursuit, was to be able to say to myself, "You don't get to run the show." Church, I don't think you have to do 7 day fast. I'm going to challenge some of you in just a few weeks. I'm going to challenge you to give up some time. I'm going to ask you to give up some things that you enjoy for a period of time to just give space for the Lord to speak to you. I'm going to ask some of you to give up some food. I'm going to ask some of you to limit. I'm going to ask some of you to just think and see if God wouldn't have you just sacrifice something so that the body, the mind, the heart would learn. Man does not live by bread alone. Man will be fine. Man will be okay. And ultimately, what he really needs is the Lord. Can I tell you this evening, God has a place he wants to take us. And I think even more importantly than trying to get God to do what we want, I believe fasting is the tool he'll use to get us to go where he wants. Understand, there's a big revival moment in this passage where through from about verse number 6 to verse number 32, we won't take the time to dive into them. But what God does is he replays through Nehemiah the history of the people. And here from this humbled, weakened place, a place where the priorities have started to jumble together correctly, we find that they are able to see a perspective on their past. And God starts making some things clear to them, the way God had done things that had left them with big question marks. Because they were obedient to come back to him, and because they were obedient to follow in a fast to the Lord, we find out in this position, God helps answer questions about the things in their past. God helps them see a bigger picture than just the little picture they were looking in right then and there. And isn't that how it works? And when it comes time to eat, we're really living in that one moment right then and there. And sometimes we talk about being grateful for what we have and praying great, you know, praying and thanks to God. But if we're not careful, sometimes we just kind of go through the motions daily. But in this fast, what has happened is they've opened and exposed their heart to the reality that they're going to be okay without food. So what they really need is God. And what God God does through Nehemiah is begin to change the perspective. And all those years they had been running along blindly, thinking God is just being mean to them and holding them down, and God was punishing them somehow. God helps them understand, like he does in verse number 6. He says, no, I want you to remember that God was good to you. In 6 to 15, in those verses there, he is describing God's greatness to them. And he tells them that God had been great, but it was the hardness of their heart in verse number 16 and 17. And it was God's grace was given to them in verse 17, but Israel ran to idolatry. And then God gave them mercy, and then Israel disobeyed, and God disciplined them, and Israel ran to evil, and God delivered them, and Israel had a stiff neck, and God showed them patience and grace and mercy. Even in his judgment, he was doing good things for them. And I remind you tonight that none of these question marks of their past would be cleared up and clarified if there had not come a time where they were willing to hunger more for God than they hungered for the very food they put in their face. And we find a God who begins to help them see the big picture because they got their eyes off of this little picture called lunchtime. And I think South Knollwood Baptist Church, what we need in revival this year is we need God to once again remind us of how big and great and good he is, how wicked and how sinful our flesh is, and how desperately we need him. How desperately we need to walk with God. I believe God's given you a tool for that. You know, one of the concerns I have, one of my biggest prayers about revival coming up in October is that we're going to do 7 nights of meetings, and there's going to be some responses, right? There's going to be certain kinds of responses. One, I'm really busy. I got a lot of stuff going on, and I'm just not going to be able to, I'm not going to be able to make it. And we're going to miss out on an opportunity. There's going to be the response that, man, we're here every week. We're here every night of the week. And boy, we're really plugged in. And preacher, it was tiring. We're really worn out. And we get worried about the flesh. And we start winding down a little bit and get weary in the well-doing. And then there's going to be those who just say, you know what, preacher, I'm going to prepare now so that those 7 days are everything God would make them to be. And I'm going to prepare myself and I'm going to be ready. And I'm going to ask God to speak to me. And I'm going to get rid of some junk in my life that's been distracting me from the Lord. And I'm going to put the word of God in my life on a daily basis. And I'm going to change the things I'm watching. And I'm going to change the things I'm listening to. And I'm not trying to get God to do anything, but you better know that I want God to have every piece, every part of access to my heart he wants. And I believe it's those who respond this way that God will really, truly reach with revival. One of the greatest tools God has given to you is the tool of fasting. And I'm asking you, in preparation of revival, would you prayerfully ask the Lord, Lord, I want to fast. In the next couple of weeks, as preacher preaches on these subjects, Lord, I'm going to open my heart to fasting. And when pastor goes on a fast in the weeks ahead, Lord, I want to join him. There's some things I'm going to give up. There's some times and meals that I'm going to skip. And maybe there'll be a 24-hour. Maybe it'll just be 16. Or maybe it'll be 20. Whatever, God, you put on my heart, I want to be ready for revival. And I'm going to jump in with you. I believe we could be prepared. Or we can just do revival like we do every other service. I say we prepare now. My friend, would you please consider in prayer that God would have you fast in the next 60 days, some point that God can get a hold of your heart, focus your perspective on him, and remind you that you really don't need the stuff of this world. Would you stand with me tonight?